I'm Carol Hills, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Boston. There's a new deal between European leaders on migration. It came after an all-night meeting in Brussels. The agreement aims to restrict the movement of migrants within Europe and establish centers to process asylum requests outside of Europe. British Prime Minister Theresa May says it's a step forward.
We've come to positive conclusions, a lot of them around what the United Kingdom has been encouraging for some time, which is taking more action upstream in countries of origin so that we can ensure that people aren't having to make and aren't making these very dangerous journeys, often travelling many miles, often at the hands of the people smugglers, and making the dangerous trips across the Mediterranean where we still see some people dying.
The new plan comes amid an uptick in asylum seekers risking that trip across the Mediterranean from North Africa and growing pressure from Italy's new government to crack down on immigration. My BBC colleague James Reynolds is covering the story from the Maltese capital, Valletta.
They've done a little bit of what Italy wanted in reinforcing the Libyan Coast Guard. In other words, to try to stop boats from setting off across the Mediterranean from Libya towards Malta and Italy. Secondly, the EU has talked in rather vague language about exploring the creation of migrant centres in Africa itself, so-called disembarkation platforms, which Italy has called for. There's no actual commitment from any countries in North Africa, which of course were not represented at the EU summit. And there is one other point, which is the potential establishment of what are called control centres or migrant holding centres by EU countries. Those will be in Europe itself and carried out on a voluntary basis. But the crucial point lacking from the accord is this. We don't know who those volunteers might be. No one has yet put up their hand. And therefore, I think Italy and Malta, from where I'm speaking, will only be happy once the rather vague language has been transformed into actual tangible commitments, because we've all seen in the past EU deals about migration fail. There was one I remember reporting on in 2015, a relocation deal that fell apart in the end.
Yeah, there's so many mentions of the word voluntary in this agreement. I mean, what's concrete about it?
Nothing at the moment, which is the worry potentially for Italy and for Malta that good words on paper, if they rely on the word voluntary, have nothing to stand up behind. The reason that word was put in is that Central and Eastern European states did not want to have anything to do with hosting more migrants. The right-wing and occasionally populist governments in that part of the European Union want to have nothing to do with it. I'm here in Malta. I spend a lot of time in Italy as well. And it's still not clear how these centres would work. If a boat arrives in Italy or in Malta, would everyone there be flown to a different country, to Belgium, the Netherlands, France, or Spain for inspection? How would that work? The language of the agreement is not clear.
Italy basically held this meeting hostage until they dealt with the issue of migration, and they feel like they've been especially burdened by the migrants. Are they pleased with this agreement?
They say they are. The Prime Minister, Giuseppe Conte, said it shows that Italy is not alone. He signed up to the agreement. Therefore, of course, he now has to try to sell it. But I think on reflection for some of the Italian coalition, this populist coalition, they might be rather worried by the vague language. It's all very well saying there should be a voluntary commitment, but who will be the volunteers?
The number of migrants coming across the Mediterranean from Libya has dropped precipitously in the past year or so. What's been behind that drop in migrants?
A deal between Italy and Libya that was arranged by the previous Italian government, a centre-left government. It reached a deal by which it would give support and training to the Libyan Coast Guard so that when boats set off from the Libyan coast, instead of carrying on towards the Mediterranean and Malta and Italy, the Libyan Coast Guard would stop those boats. And that has resulted in a 70 to 80% drop in traffic across the Mediterranean on that dangerous route. The new Italian government inherited that policy, but has decided that it doesn't even want to live with that drop. It wants to get the number down to zero.
So despite this drop, migration is still just this hot issue within the EU.
It is. And I was in Catania, one of the main ports of Sicily the other day, and my colleagues and I were speaking to people, and about a dozen people, I'd say about 10 of whom, were vociferously anti-migrant. They said they were fed up. They said that they wanted help from other countries, that Italy should not be left on its own. Now, of course, one can put it to them that migration is down 70 to 80% over the last 12 months. But what they would reply to that is they're still dealing with the cumulative effect of several years of what, from their point of view, was unchecked migration.
Does the approach by Donald Trump and his kind of crackdown on migration here and crackdown on borders, does that affect the debate over migration within Europe?
I'm pretty sure that it does. Matteo Salvini, the interior minister of Italy, is a very strongly anti-migrant voice, a very powerful voice, and it is noticeable the similarities in his rhetoric when you compare it to President Trump's rhetoric. Matteo Salvini even has extended beyond migration. The other day he talked about trying to conduct a partial census of the Roma itinerant community in Italy, and then he said, unfortunately, those with Italian citizenship would be allowed to stay, something which worried a lot of people in Italy, feeling that it was perhaps a reminder of a 1930s past that hadn't been entirely buried.
Now, you're in Valletta, Malta, and that's an interesting place to be because it's where this migrant ship, the Lifeline ship, it was run by a German charity, it was finally allowed to dock there after being rejected by several countries. What's happened to the migrants from that ship?
They've been sent to a holding center called Marsa, which I went and had a look at a little earlier. The migrants, we were about separated from them about 40 or 50 meters on the other side of a rather dirty canal. They were calm. They were wearing new orange T-shirts and other clothes that had been given to them. They were just standing on a terrace, taking in their first full day on solid ground. And some of them carried papers in their hands. Clearly, the process of identifying them and sifting through their asylum claims has begun. We know there were three babies on board that ship. They'd been taken to hospital for preliminary examination, but we haven't been told that they were to stay there. And essentially, these more than 200 migrants will now begin the process of seeing which European countries they will be taken to. Around eight countries have so far put up their hands and said, we'll take them. Those eight countries may be the beginnings of those volunteers that we've talked about for the larger deal.
But those 200 will definitely be placed somewhere in Europe?
What we understand is that those 200 will be given the chance to be placed in those other countries in Europe. Some countries have only pledged to take about 20 or 25, but those countries, a lot of them in Western Europe and in Portugal and Southern Europe, say that they still have to carry out asylum checks. They want to check who there are. They want to check what kind of record they might have.
Doctors Without Borders Medical Charity, they've branded this new EU deal inhumane. Is there any validity to that?
I think their point will be that Libyan coast guards may not treat people the way that the EU would hope people to be treated, and that returning migrants to detention centers in North Africa would subject them to conditions which the EU should not be proud of.
The BBC's James Reynolds speaking to us from Malta. Thanks a lot, James.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
As we just heard from James, Italy's new government wants to cut migration into their country to zero. As part of that policy, the country's interior minister has vowed to close Italy's ports to all foreign ships rescuing migrants on the Mediterranean. The world's Rich Hall has been reporting on the migrant crisis in the region. Last year, he traveled on one of those rescue ships for our Global Post Investigations Unit. And since then, there's been a twist to the story of that ship.
That's right. So it was about this time last year that I was out in the Mediterranean Sea with one of these rescue ships. And I was there to document these rescue missions and see what they were like and see where the migrants are coming from.
All stations. There are approximately 130 people on board the first rubber boat.
And then subsequently something very strange came out about the boat that I was on. It turned out that there was an undercover agent, a spy working for the Italian police on board the ship that I was on.
So at the time you were on the ship, was there any kind of talk? Was there any suspicion that there was a spy on board?
No, we had absolutely no idea. So I'll just explain the situation, what the situation was out there on the ship. So you had the Save the Children crew, and then you had this Italian security team that was working with Save the Children. And the security team would basically help with the rescues and then do crowd control when the migrants were on board. The aid workers considered themselves part of one big team. But these security workers, these Italian security workers, they were feeding information back to the police. And they helped bring an undercover agent working for the Italian police on board. This undercover operation was made possible by a man called Christian Ricci. He was the head of that security team. Again, considered a friend by these aid workers. They worked together in this really stressful and chaotic environment. No one had any idea at the time. And it only became public when the authorities seized another rescue ship based on the spying that they'd done from the Save the Children ship. And so when they seized, impounded this other ship, this undercover operation on board the boat that I was on was made public.
So how did you hear about it? Were you like reading a newspaper or reading online and you read this and you went, whoa?
Yeah, it was exactly one of those moments. I saw it online and I thought, hold on a minute, was this a ship that I was on? And I started calling all the aid workers who I was on the ship with, and they were just as bemused as me. And in fact, they had more of a reason to be surprised because they lived alongside these people on this boat and they were angry.
So I understand you actually tracked this guy down, Christian Ricci.
Hey, Christian. How are you?
Fine.
Good to see you.
And what did he say?
That's right. I didn't think he would talk to me, to be honest. I thought he'd want to go and hide away. But it was interesting. I wanted to find out his motivations for doing this. Because the confusing thing about this was that he was there. He was saving people from the sea. He was doing it. He was saving lives. And he was affected by it. He'd broken down crying after some of these rescues. So I wanted to know why he would undermine them like this.
And what did he say?
His basic argument was that the charities don't distinguish between economic migrants and actual refugees. He saw that as a problem, and he wanted to monitor these people more and investigate who was coming onto their boats.
They make a great job because they save life, but they don't make different from criminal and other people. This is the problem.
His whole argument was they should be doing more to help the police monitor the people that were coming onto the boats. And Save the Children and the other rescuers, their position was, we're not the police. We're out here to save lives, and we can't be focusing on doing their job for them. We'll cooperate with them, but we're not going to do their job for them.
Rich, did you feel persuaded by Christian Ricci's explanation? Do you think he was genuinely moved by these rescues, but still sort of troubled by certain aspects of it?
I do, yeah. I think ultimately he's quite a patriotic man. He was in the Navy before he was doing these missions. I did ask him kind of how did you feel about lying to the people or deceiving the people you worked so closely alongside with? And this is what he told me.
Did you feel like you were being dishonest with your friends on the ship?
No, because when I started, I decided to follow my conscience.
What would you say to them?
I think that I follow my conscience. Yeah, only this.
I think he thought he was doing the right thing because he thought he saw something going on.
What are you referring to?
They thought that the charities were collaborating with human traffickers. They thought that they were communicating with them and helping them in some ways.
That just sounds nutty. What kind of collusion were they suggesting?
So it could be small things. So for instance, one of the main allegations was that once they'd unloaded one of these little dinghies that the migrants travel on, once they'd taken the migrants off them onto their ship, they then carried this little dinghy, dragged it along the water back towards Libya so the people smugglers could fill it back up again. And that was what they thought they saw. The NGOs and the charities deny doing this. They said they carried it in the other direction. It's small things like that that this undercover agent saw and perhaps thought he saw one thing and the NGOs, the charities say it was another thing.
Rich, do you get the sense that the Italian government is helping to kind of push these rumors of conspiracy between the rescue boats and Libya? Does it serve a political end or am I being too harsh?
Well, it's interesting because if you go back to last year and even before that, this narrative that these rescue missions were collaborating with smugglers, it came from people like Matteo Salvini, who is now the interior minister. He was back then, he was the leader of this far right Lega party. This narrative came from them originally. And back then, they were just a party trying to win votes and get into government. Today, he's the interior minister. So today, he is the government. And it's gone from this right-wing narrative to official Italian policy.
Correspondent Rich Hall with our Global Post Investigations Unit. We've got a lot more of his reporting on that story at PRI.org.